Joining the Colorado Ag News Network this time by telephone is Colorado Farm Bureau's Vice President of Advocacy, Sean Martini. We'll be discussing several topics related to Colorado's agriculture industry. But first off, Sean, welcome back inside the barn.
Good to talk with you, Brian. Thanks for having me.
I know you guys have had a busy fall. You've had quite a few Colorado Farm Bureau events around the state just not too long ago. Pedal the Plains. How'd that go from the Farm Bureau standpoint?
Pedal the Plains was great. It was hot in southeast Colorado. It was about 94, and a couple of the days the riders had about an 18 to 20 mile an hour headwind. Everybody got through, all our riders finished, and we had another fantastic tour on Pedal the Plains to talk about agriculture and energy and all the things that are important to eastern Colorado.
And speaking of tours, Colorado Farm Bureau just participated in the Colorado Hemp Advancement and Management Plan, or CHAMP, down in Pueblo. Tell me a little bit more about that event.
Yeah, that was an event to bring members from the Colorado Hemp Advancement Plan Committee down to see a working hemp farm and integrated hemp processing facility. The members from all accounts had a really good time seeing how sort of the top end of the industry works. BJ is doing a really good job on the cultivation side. They're doing all their own processing and extraction as well, drying the plants down. So the members of the task force really got a good hands-on look at how the industry should work and how production should work when it's really firing on all cylinders.
Of course, the CHAMP initiative is a statewide initiative made up of hemp industry stakeholders who will provide Colorado's official state management plan to the USDA after the 2018 Farm Bill is fully implemented. My guest, once again, the Vice President of Advocacy with the Colorado Farm Bureau, Sean Martini. You know, also recently, back on September 12th in Washington, D.C., the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and Administrator Andrew Wheeler and Department of Army's Assistant Secretary for Civil Works announced the agencies were repealing the 2015 Waters of the U.S. rule. Your thoughts on that? Because that was huge.
That was huge, Brian. You're right. We were very happy to have that happen because the state's AG pulled us out of one of the lawsuits against WOTUS from the court in North Dakota. The state of Colorado was put back under the authority of the 2015 WOTUS rule. We were one of the few states in the country where that 2015 rule still applied, even pursuant to ongoing litigation, because, again, we were pulled out of that lawsuit against WOTUS. So our producers were still under the authority of EPA under the 2015 WOTUS. Left a lot of uncertainty. Now that that rule has been officially rescinded by EPA, we don't have that uncertainty continuing on, and we're hoping the administration works quickly on a replacement rule in order to help stop unfriendly sort of lawsuits from negating that rescission of the 2015 rule.
Now, as I understand it, that was just the first step of a two-step rulemaking process. What's the next step? Is it under comment period now for a final rule?
It's under comment period now for the rescission, but that rescission should go through, and then the administration has said that they're going to replace the 2015 rule completely because they, and we agree, say that it was fatally flawed from the outset. So they're going to go back in and replace it with something that works much better for producers, both in Colorado and across the country, insert some flexibility into the rule to recognize and acknowledge that there are regional differences from state to state, from region to region, and in terms of how water is administrated. Some of the concerns are held with that type of enforcement, whether you're in Iowa and Ohio where it's really wet, or if you're in Colorado where it's really dry, and we have things like seasonal and ephemeral streams that they don't necessarily have in other parts of the country. So making sure that the rule is flexible in determining where federal authority ends and where state authority begins on water quality all across the country.
And the EPA's been in the news as well regarding the biofuel waiver fix. That was under scrutiny by agriculture and the USDA, along with the EPA, announced that they did have a biofuel waiver fix. Any quick comments about that before I move on to the next topic?
You know, agriculture is under some pretty significant stress right now with commodity prices, so it's a really good thing that the administration has kind of put a fix together for this small refinery waivers, trying to up the actual levels of biofuel production to where they should be mandated by law. It's a good thing that they came up with this and are moving forward on a deal to up the level of gallons of biofuels that are produced and put into the fuel supply. It'll be good for agriculture, and we're glad they're moving forward on that.
Yeah, there's a way to understand that one as well. They're not going to do anything retroactively. It's going to be looking forward. So we'll see how things work out. The devil's in the details as they release more information about that biofuel waiver fix from the EPA and the USDA. And October 7th, President Trump also signed another huge trade agreement, a key step to growing Canada's fourth largest agriculture export market with the U.S.-Japan trade agreement. Any thoughts on that?
As you point out, Brian, this is huge, and it's really a good thing. The Japanese market has been key to U.S. and Colorado agriculture specifically for a long time. Even despite the fact that we have, anywhere from a 17 to a 27% duty on agricultural products going into Japan, that's still been a significant trading partner. Lowering those duties forward, some of them are immediately tariff-free. Others have a reduced tariff burden over the next few years. That's really going to only help us grow our market share and really start to cement and grow an even stronger relationship in terms of agricultural trade with the Japanese. We're really excited about this one.
Yeah, a little background. In 2018 alone, Colorado exported almost $240 million in farm and ranch goods to Japan, despite being subject to average duties of 17.3% or more. So that's a huge deal and a huge win for the president, and it might be putting some more pressure on Congress to get USMCA ratified. Keep in mind, though, on the U.S.-Japan trade deal, Japan's parliament or their government still has to approve that deal, and I don't think there's any problem on that, but that's just my opinion. We'll have to see things go from there. And then just this last week on Friday, October the 11th, President Trump announced with the vice premier from China that they had verbally agreed to what they're calling phase one of the U.S.-China trade war may be coming to an end soon. Your thoughts on that, or is it just too early to tell?
Yeah, again, this is an encouraging sign. But as you point out, Brian, there are devils in the details, and thus far we don't really have a whole lot of details. There's nothing really concrete, so a lot remains to be seen with this. But again, having positive noises coming out of the administration, U.S. Trade Representative's office, and China, and sort of agreeing on this verbal commitment to have China increase agricultural commodity purchases exchange for the U.S., increasing existing tariff lines and tariff rates is a good thing. We really hope that this type of action gets cemented with some real paper. And we have some details in terms of the timeline for China to go along with its agricultural commodities purchases. It's supposed to be $40 to $50 billion. We don't know whether that's going to be in a year or two, or if that's stretched out over 5 or 6 years. So it could be easy, it could be small potatoes. But having some positive steps in this ongoing process is for now really good, and helps agriculture producers at least a little bit looking forward to have some certainty into what's going on with these negotiations, and hopefully they can get a broader deal that incorporates more of the things that the U.S. really wants to see with regards to intellectual property protection and technology transfer, some of those more structural things. We can have positive progress on that in the future.
It'll take about 4 to 5, maybe 6 weeks to get everything put together from what I had reports on this morning through my Ag News services. Of course, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer and Steve Mnuchin also worked hard on getting it to this point. But like you say, we'll have to see what happens because the jury's still out on that. If it is $50 billion a year, which was reported this morning, that would be 2.5 times more than the highest purchases in the history of China doing business with the United States. Of course, the African swine fever is putting a lot of pressure on China, and some reports that North Korea's it's devastated their hog herd too. So, but I think they're probably trying to get something done sooner rather than later as well. But neither side wants to admit that they've given up anything. But this actually, with the U.S.-Japan trade deal being signed and the potential for a U.S.-China trade war to come to an end, that's going to put a lot of pressure on Congress, isn't it, Sean, to get the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement done sooner rather than later as well?
We are sure hoping so, and that's what we're pushing for. Both us and American Farm Bureau Federation, states and commodity organizations around the country are really pushing Congress and the administration hard on this one. Right now, the ball is definitely in Congress's court. Again, they've been making A lot of good noises coming out of the U.S. Representative's office and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office on this. They've all committed to wanting to get this done and find an area of agreement. And ultimately, both House Democrats and the administration know this is something that America really needs right now. Just from an macroeconomic perspective, there are lots of signs of potentially troubled waters ahead as it pertains to global and U.S. domestic economic growth. In relieving some of the uncertainty associated with some of these trade agreements, and would really help, I think, strengthen several of the factors and indicators on the future economic growth. And so I think everybody really knows they need to get this done. And to your point, if we can use progress on some of the agreements with Japan and China in order to help move the ball down the field on passing USMCA and getting that ratified, that would be a really good thing. And I think that argues for this agreement hopefully being done by Thanksgiving, if not by the end of the year.
Keep in mind, folks, it's been almost a year since the ceremonial signing took place. And also think of this. It only took Congress 3 months to get the Farm Bill rammed through. And it's taken them over a year to approve a trade deal with two of our allied countries that are hooked together with us in mutual borders. So it just doesn't make sense sometimes, but I hope they get it done sooner rather than later. Once again, my guest is Sean Martini, Colorado Farm Bureau's Vice President of Advocacy. I wanted to move to some state issues and also to some Farm Bureau issues. I understand that Richard Connell celebrated 36 years of dedication to the Farm Bureau and just retired this month.
He certainly did. Just a few years ago, we were all very happy and sad to wish Richard good luck in retirement. He's been representing Colorado agriculture around the state for, as you said, 36 years with Colorado Farm Bureau, and has a fantastic and distinguished career doing so. But it's also appropriate to say goodbye at some point and be done and enjoy retirement and enjoy the fruits of his labor. And I know he's got a lot of plans to do quite a few relaxing activities and take a breather for a little while. So we were very sad to see Richard go. He's made fantastic contributions to the industry, but it was it's a well-deserved retirement for him, for sure.
You bet. We wish Richard Connell all the best in retirement, and we'll probably be seeing him at the upcoming 100th Colorado Farm Bureau's annual meeting, which is November 22nd and 24th at the Renaissance Denver Stapleton Hotel. You guys have a lot planned for this year's big anniversary.
That's for sure. I don't think Richard would miss it for the world. This is Colorado Farm Bureau's 100th anniversary. We're pulling out all the stops to celebrate that this year. Coming up at our annual meeting on the 22nd through the 24th of November. And as you alluded to, we've got a lot of special programming. Zippy Duvall, who's American Farm Bureau Federation's president, is going to be coming and talking and having an armchair discussion with the members. We're also going to have Undersecretary Greg Ibaugh from USDA come and speak with Zippy as well. We've also got something that we're really excited about, what we're calling the 1919 Ball. And this is really kind of our big party to celebrate our centennial and our 100th year. This will be taking place on the evening of the 22nd, which is the Friday of annual meeting. This is separate programming, but it's going to be a formal ball with music by the Denver's Hot Tomatoes Swing Orchestra. It's going to be playing music from the 30s, 40s, and 50s all evening. Folks are going to dress up in costume from sort of the decade of their choice from Farm Bureau's past. I know there's going to be a lot of flapper dresses and a lot of zoot suits in the room, but should be a really fun costume ball as a way to kick off, celebrate Farm Bureau's 100th year and kick off our entry into the next 100 years.
So what's the best way for folks to see the complete schedule for not only the 100th annual meeting, but also the 1919 ball? And how would they get registered? And are there deadlines to do so?
Deadlines are coming up not until later in November. I think November 15th is deadline for registration, both for the meeting and for the 1919 ball. You can register after for the ball, of course, but the costs go up after that point. So we're in early bird registration right now. Easiest way is to just Google Colorado Farm Bureau or go to coloradofarmbureau.com. All the information for the 1919 ball and for the rest of annual meeting registration, agenda, and the like is up there on the website at coloradofarmbureau.com.
And, of course, before they even do that, they really need to be considering becoming members of the Colorado Farm Bureau because there's quite a few benefits too, right?
There are quite a few benefits, and one of the things that we rolled out this year as part of our centennial celebration Rogers was a new vehicle benefit partnership with Ford Motor Company. Both Ford and Lincoln both now offer discounts to Farm Bureau members anywhere between $500 and $750 on your Ford or Lincoln vehicle purchase, which is pretty exciting. One of the neat things about that is that discount can stack with other incentives and cash offers and things that both the dealers and the manufacturers offer. So members of Colorado Farm Bureau can tack another $500 to $750 off the cost of a new Ford vehicle purchase.
Membership benefits in the Colorado Farm Bureau also include equipment dealership discounts too, right?
Deals and discounts with Case IH, John Deere, Greenjaw, Caterpillar. There's Choice Hotels. So there's a bunch of different hotel and vehicle rent discounts. The Granger discount is really fantastic. Granger Supply can supply, you know, anything you might need for an ag shop, parts, tools and equipment and the like. And the nice thing about that is all of that drop ships to Farm Bureau members with free shipping. So you get 10 to 15% or sometimes more off on items that you might need around the farm, and they're shipped to you free.
You bet. So the membership benefits for the Colorado Farm Bureau include communications, consumer services, health benefits, home and farm, hotel services, vehicle and rental discounts too. Before I let you go, get your thoughts. Seems to me like I got the blue book in the mail the other day for this upcoming election, which is November 5th, by the way. And there's not much in that blue book this year.
It's a little quieter this year. It's an off-year election, so anything having to do with a statewide ballot question has to pertain to tax issues. Those are the couple that we have on the ballot for now.
So on CC, you guys have a position on that? That, of course, is the Tabor repeal. That's the short definition.
No, we don't have a position on CC, but we do have a position on DD. And that's the initiative to sanction statewide sports betting, online sports betting, through casinos, and then apply a tax to that that would then go to water project funding and funding the state's water plan. The idea behind this is it would create a significant revenue stream that is dedicated to state water project funding going forward. Through the taxing of sports betting, which the U.S. Supreme Court has identified as something that is constitutional, and states can go forward and sanction that.
So the Farm Bureau is in support of Referendum DD, or Initiative DD?
Yes, in support of Referendum DD or Initiative DD. This is one of the best chances we think we have to get dedicated revenue for Colorado's water plan and funding future water projects. Of course, the state population is only going to grow going forward, and we've seen how difficult it is for the General Assembly to peel off and dedicate significant amounts of funding for state water plan and improving water projects around the state. And so we're supportive of the idea because we need to do everything we can to create dedicated revenue streams for water going forward so we don't have extremely difficult problems like they've identified in some of our neighboring states, like in California and Arizona. We want to make sure that Colorado grow going forward, have the water to do so, and also be able to keep that water in agricultural production. So it is, there's less of an incentive to transfer that water from agriculture to municipal use, where all the population growth is going to be happening, continuing to fund the state's water plan and ensure that there's adequate funding for water projects going forward is the best way we have of doing that right now. And so we are supportive of Initiative DD.
So, Sean, do you guys anticipate taking a position on Referendum CC or not?
I don't believe so. I think the board has determined that that's not something that's necessarily within our policy book. The policy book is unclear as the subject matter of Initiative CC, and so the board has taken a decision to stay out of that one for now.
And one more question in regards to DD. Is that in difference or contrast to Tabor anyway, if that one does pass, or do you think there might be a court challenge on DD? Because it is a tax.
It is a tax, and I don't think there would, because this is consistent with Tabor, which is to say that tax increases and new taxes must go before the people to be voted on by the state of Colorado. So if it passes, that would be through a process that's consistent with Tabor.
Okay, I appreciate you clarifying that. Before I let you go, though, any other issues, concerns, or upcoming events that you want to make mention of besides, of course, the 100th annual meeting?
You know, that's the biggest thing that's on our agenda for right now. And we've got the American Farm Bureau annual meeting that will be coming up in January. And of course, there will be quite a few things to talk about at that annual meeting. We will be working on a farm bill again. So a lot of the attention will shift to what's going on the trade front, both with China and hopefully we'll be celebrating having a completed USMCA at that point in January.
Now, speaking of the American Farm Bureau Federation's annual convention and trade show, it's January 17th to the 22nd, and that'll be in Austin, Texas, and registration's open right now. Just go to fb.org to learn more, see a complete schedule, and get registered. Any final thoughts before we let you go?
Well, that annual meeting in Austin should be a fun one, and hopefully we will be celebrating the ratification of USMCA. But as we're not dealing with having to write another farm bill, I think a lot of the discussion will be focused on U.S.-China trade and potentially trying to seek additional avenues of opening up trade with other countries around the world. We know the administration favors these bilateral agreements, so I would suspect that a lot of the discussion at that annual meeting will shift to trade and trade-related issues. But who knows? Stuff pops up all the time, as it seems now, with this administration, so we'll have to see what takes up most of the delegates' time coming up in January in Austin.
Well, let's just hope they get, like you said, USMCA completed and this China trade war gets over with. And that would really settle things down on the ag side and probably heat up the markets, I would think. We'll just have to wait and see what happens there. Really appreciate your time, Sean. Look forward to our next visit right here inside the barn.
Thanks a lot, Brian. Thank you.
Once again, those comments from Colorado Farm Bureau's Vice President of Advocacy, Sean Martini. The Colorado Farm Bureau is dedicated to helping family farmers and ranchers stay on their land and continue to produce the food, fiber, and fuel we need to feed ourselves and the world. Learn more about the Colorado Farm Bureau and how you can become a member by visiting ColoradoFarmBureau.com.